Well, we are so excited that you have joined us for this Dive Deep interview with Ron and Jody Zappia. And Ron and Jody have written a book called The Marriage Knot. And it is an excellent book. We have really enjoyed reading it. And so Ron and Jody, we want to say welcome to No More Perfect Date Night.
Well, we are excited to be with you guys and so thankful to have us on, man. It's good stuff.
Yeah, we can't wait to have this good visit with you and your listeners.
Well, good. Thank you. Well, why don't you guys start and just tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, and
where do you live?
We live in Wheaton, Illinois. So we've been living in the Chicagoland area now for, man, it's our whole, it seems like ever since we, when we graduated from college and jobs and all that, this is the place that we started. And so we've got three great daughters and man, it's exciting. We just did this. If you can believe this, we had two weddings last summer. So two of our oldest daughters got married and our one daughter is she's a freshman in college. So we're kind of hitting a different stage right now. It's kind of exciting.
Yes.
Yeah. You guys will be ready for my next book. It's Empty Nest, Full Life.
Oh, I'm telling you, that sounds good. All right, we're ready. Get that written, please. We're having some issues right now.
Coming out in August. That's great. Well, good. And you're a pastor at a church there.
Yeah. So Jody and I, you know, we grew up in, non-Christian homes and we didn't want to go into ministry, quite honestly. That wasn't anything that was on our radar. I still have college friends that kind of joke around with me and they're saying, you know, can you make a living doing that? And they make fun of me, you know, but seriously, it wasn't something that was on our radar at all. And so we started a church back in the year 2000. And, you know, I wound up quitting my job, going to seminary, and we started a church in the western suburbs of Chicago and met in high school. And next thing you knew, it started growing. And so we're in four locations now, which is really, really exciting. Yeah. So Jody and I, we're amazed. We're amazed what God can do and will do. And for all of us, all those watching, I mean, he can turn some things on you that you don't even recognize or realize in relationships, occupations, job, all that stuff.
Oh, no kidding. So true.
Well, one of the things you guys do and one of the things we appreciated about the book is that you share your story and you share your story pretty openly. It's a little messy. Yeah. And so we would love for you to just launch us with your story so that we understand kind of the context and the background for what you really are talking about in your book.
And really the story is you know, we start out to kind of telling that that's where it all begins and that's for us where things happen. So Jody, I'm gonna let you get into it because I don't look too good in this story, so we're just gonna be honest right now and just prep the listener. So I know Mark and Jill, you know where this is going.
I know. Oh yeah, we read.
I'm about to go down pretty deep right now. Yeah. All those guys out there that are, you know, watching, just know it's going to happen. So go ahead.
Yeah. Well, we started out as, you know, high school sweethearts. We actually met in middle school. Yeah. I think Ron, I borrowed 20 cents from him, and then tried to pay him back the next day. And he was like, oh no, you know, oh no, keep it. He refused the 20, you know, and then I joke because it's like, I feel like I've paid that my whole life. It's the most expensive phone call I've ever made. Yeah. But anyhow, that's how we met. And then we started dating a little later, but pretty much dated through high school. We were, went to different colleges trying to give each other space. Our parents had told us, you know, they used to use a funny term called, you should play the field.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Don't,
parents
which
said that.
Now I think about that.
I have I'm three daughters. Sure, we would never tell our daughters to do that.
Yeah. So we went to different colleges to give each other space. But even in that, you know, we had started to develop some habits that just were not going to be good for marriage. We didn't realize it at the time. Seemed like that's what everyone did. And so we had this long distance relationship, and then finally we get married, and I don't know, I think it's kind of happening with young couples now still, where, you know, you both are pursuing college and careers, and then, you know, we were in different colleges, slightly different parts of the country. So he's getting job offers in Cleveland, I got a job offer in Connecticut. So we get engaged and we're not even in the same state. We managed to pull together a wedding, but the first 3 or 4 months we weren't in the same state. So he was in Cleveland, and I got transferred from like Detroit to Chicago, and finally Chicago is where we were together in marriage. Right. But that was, like I said, a good 3 months into our marriage. So some of the things that contributed to our breakdown, which we ended up having a massive breakdown, really right about at the 1 year mark, like we couldn't even make it 1 year. And that's, we had known each other longer than any of our friends. We had dated 8 years, but you know, before we got married, or eight or 10, I don't know, known each other 10, dated eight, you know, but again, we were kids. But still, it didn't take long for us to crash and burn. And, so we get together, we finally think, okay, this is it. But we've gotten so good at the long distance that I think that being together, the day to day, you know, putting each other first, all that stuff was kind of foreign to us. We were really good on the weekends, but right. we didn't know how to do the regular day to day. And then started just making some really bad choices. You know, Ron ended up getting involved with somebody at his work and inappropriate relationship. I, on the other hand, was still really driven in my job and was not making the transition of, you know, I was still, I just thought that's what I was supposed to do, was work really hard and be really successful. Right. And it was happening for me. My job was really taking off. And I think that was even hard for Ron too, because he ended up kind of leaving his job to come where I was. Somebody had to make that first sacrifice, you know, to get us in the same city. And I think that was harder on him than, and he didn't verbalize it. Yeah. So I had
didn't
no idea
verbalize
that
anything
was going
at that
on.
Time. I mean, it was just, you know, typical, just push it all in. And, you know, as Jody said, next thing I, you know, I knew I was in a relationship and an unfaithfulness and infidelity. And Jody had prayed. She called out to God. What? We weren't Christians. And tell about that prayer.
Yeah, I didn't pray very often, but I had a sense that, you know, I knew something was wrong. And I prayed one night, you know, God, I know something is wrong. And if you'll show it to me, I'll do my part. It was something like that. It was a very simple prayer. But literally the next night, I walked in on a nightmare. You know, like I wasn't supposed to be home. I was supposed to be out of town, but I, you know, was working on a presentation, didn't get it done. And so then Ron was getting home from having been out of town, which again tells you a little bit about where we were at. You know, like, why was I leaving when he was getting home? But I walked in and then it was pretty much, you know, a nightmare. And, but that next day, you know, I had called my sister and, I was like, I'm pretty sure I can get a divorce for this, right? Isn't this grounds for divorce? You heard of that? And she's like, well, that's a really big decision. And, she and her husband, just all they had said to me, which again was kind of unusual for my family, but my sister, she'd said, well, you need to get counseling, but make sure it's Christian counseling. And I'm pretty sure that was my brother-in-law kind of urging her to say that. And, so I just trusted her. Like at that point, I was in such a mess. I just knew my sister was always going to give me her best advice. And so the next morning I got dressed up, went to church, to this church across the street. I waited for church to be over. But I walked in and I was looking for this pastor and no one's there, you know, the office is empty. And so I start looking at a bulletin board, looking for, you know, marriage counseling or, and this woman, came up to me and she happened to be Asian and she was like cleaning up, and she came up and asked me what was going on, and she was so compassionate. I she's the first person I had to verbalize, you know, the mess we were in. And I basically was saying, I think I need to, you know, get a divorce, you know, and I kind of started crying, and then she teared up, and then little did I know we had a major language barrier, because she had a very, very strong Asian accent. And, but what was interesting is the Lord worked through that in such an amazing way. In her few words, one of the things she said to me was, my husband, he was a failure too. And
that's what we are, Mark. That's it right there. I'm telling you, everybody wants it. I told you it was coming. We all are.
I'm right there,
And then she told me to go to this church, and it's called Willow Creek. When she said it, it sounded like Widow Creek. And I was thinking, well, I thought about killing him last night, but that's why I'm here. Like, I just, it was not a good idea. And so she ended up sitting down with me. She gave me that quick little testimony, but then she said, but go there. They had a marriage workshop. Right. And she said, go there, but don't go there with half your heart. Go there with your whole heart. And those words I know were directly from the Holy Spirit, because I would be sitting, we ended up going to this workshop that was starting the following night on a Monday night. They were 1 week into an 8 week thing. And that's where it all began for us, because that's the first time somebody started talking about God's design for marriage. And, you know, we were kind of fish out of the water, but I would sit there and literally those words would come back to me, because I'd be, I kind of had a pro con list, and I was, I was going to give this decision 2 weeks in my Franklin planner. You know, I was going to make a decision about a divorce. And I, every now and then my mind would drift to start making my pro con list. And I would realize I wasn't listening with my whole heart, and I would set my pencil down, you know? So anyhow, the Lord really used her, used that workshop to get us started.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, so what wound up happening is we sat down with the pastor, and the pastor that was leading that workshop. And again, this is a, you know, huge church. 500 people are in this workshop. I mean, this is, you know, and I was sinking in my chair every week as I was just, you know, I didn't know this. I wasn't, we weren't followers of Christ. We didn't understand. We didn't know that the Bible addressed marriage or what to do. And, you know, we had only seen what our parents did, which, you know, they stuck together and did some great things, but we just didn't have God in the center at all. Yeah. And we walked into a pastor's office who was leading it, and he did an interesting thing, was quite unique. And he just said, you know, I've only got about 45 minutes. He said, we can talk about the mess that your marriage is in, or we can talk about the forgiveness that's available in Christ. And we both looked at each other, and honestly, you know, God was working in our hearts. And next thing I knew, tears in our eyes. And, you know, to make a very long story short, a 45-minute meeting, he led us to Christ. And we walked out of there, you know, not understanding what was going to come next. I mean, Jody, you know, was, we didn't know, you know, are we going to stay married? Like, we didn't know. All I knew was this, that the things that I was doing and what I was involved in, I sensed the forgiveness of Christ. Like never before, just the weight come off as I walked to my car that night, and we walked together, and I sensed it. I knew it. And I know you guys have experienced that along with all those watching. If you know, calling out to God in genuine repentance and faith that, that anything we've done, anything we've been involved in, that forgiveness is possible. Yeah. And so it was incredible. I mean, that was the fresh start. And, you know, again, there was a lot of consequences, a lot of difficulties, a lot of choices that had to be made. And, you know, we're not here saying, you guys, we love you guys, because, you know, there's no perfect date night. There's no perfect marriage. And we got off to the wrong foot. But, you know, we got, you know, we're not perfect today, but we're in progress today still. And we started making choices that, you know, God began to use. And next thing you know, he started restoring our marriage. We started helping other couples who were in desperate need. And next thing you know, we started a church. So that's pretty fast forward.
The whirlwind begins.
Totally. So if you're having issues, and, you know, those that are, you know, watching today, you know, the little thing can turn into a big thing. Yeah. And for us, it certainly did. And unaddressed, you know, I wasn't a communicator. You know, these things started to pile up. And, you know, we always talk about this, you know, the crevice can become a crack, which can become a canyon pretty quickly. And that's what my sin had done. And, you know, I'm just thankful for God's forgiveness and grace and the second chance. You know, Jody taught me forgiveness. As she forgave me, I began to see what God, you know, what genuine repentance and forgiveness was about.
Yeah, that's a beautiful
powerful
gift.
Yep. You guys identify seven choices in your book. What would be, let's start with a couple of those that you think would be a great place to start.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and I think probably the best one to start with is, you know, we talk about, you know, growing spiritually, which we weren't on a solid foundation. But I think the question, so what we did in the book is these choices are the biblical choices that we learned, which I know you guys know. And, you know, the knot is, hey, it's going to loosen, it's going to unravel if you don't make these choices over and over again. And so we were learning them for the first time. And so we have to be really intentional about these. And I know, you know, probably the question that Jody gets asked most often when we do conferences and things like that is, you know, how did you forgive them? I mean, and that's the choice to love unconditionally.
Yeah, I get asked that same question too.
Loving unconditionally is, you know, right in 1 Corinthians 13, hey, love is keeps no record of wrong. So, Jody, why don't you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think for me, forgiveness, one thing too that I will say regarding our story is, you know, at first glance, it appeared that Ron was the perpetrator. You know, he was the one that had sinned against me and God. And I'm so thankful that in that counseling session, the person counseling, he did not let me off the hook. I went there thinking the spotlight was going to be on Ron. And I honestly thought I was going to walk out of there with an okay to get a divorce. That's what I thought this meeting was about. Right. I had no idea that I was going to end up confessing my sin. And I'm so thankful for that, because had that not happened, one person would have walked out of there with a new life and a fresh start. It would not have been me. I would have been self-righteous, thinking that I was, you know, some okay, better, because I didn't do that. Yeah. But you know, the truth is, I did know I had sin in my life. I just didn't plan on talking about it that day. I remember being angry at times with the questions he was asking me. One of them that infuriated me, I remember he asked about whether or not we had had a premarital relationship, you know, a sexual relationship. And I remember I was like, well, I'm with one person and I married him. You know, I don't know anyone else of my friend group that did that, you know. And I had this like kind of a, you know, I was trying to be a good person as best I could without Christ and without even knowing, you know, but my standards, clearly I couldn't even keep my own standards, you know. Yeah. And so what I will say is, in a circumstance, no matter what's happened, there's two people involved. Yeah. There's always, I had to own 100% of my contribution to the breakdown, and I had to own 100% of my sin. Yeah. And I had to go through the same repentance round it that day. Yeah. And I just didn't plan on it, but I'm so thankful that I did, because we would have just been on a totally different ground. So that's a word I would give. You know, even if you feel like you're only 5% responsible, 100%, you can name what that is, but you own 100% of that, and genuinely take that before the Lord. And it's just, you know, the ground is even at the foot of the cross. That's what I always say. You know, sin is sin is sin. So I left that day also for the first time feeling forgiveness. In the past, I'd maybe been wishful thinking, wondering I might be forgiven, but I'm not sure. I never felt it. But that day when I left, I felt the weight of the world off my shoulders. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Didn't know what was going to happen with the marriage, but even that didn't feel as heavy. You know, it just kind of felt like, okay, I had this sense of hope that I was going to start getting answers now, and that I didn't have to rush, and I didn't have to make that decision this Thursday, you know? Yeah. And so that was freeing. So part of my ability to forgive Ron was because I had just experienced this forgiveness myself. I kind of innately knew that I didn't know much of the Bible, but I remembered coming across a verse that said something to the extent that, you know, if you do not forgive your brother, you will not be forgiven.
Right.
And that used to be a stumbling block for me, because I knew that I had issues with that. And then so then that's one of the reasons I wasn't always sure if I was forgiven, you know? Right. And so I had this sense that I knew I needed to. Yeah. But it felt really risky. It felt like a huge, like stepping off the edge of a cliff. Right. But I knew I needed to do it. So I remember saying, okay, I think I can forgive. And I know I need to forgive. And I think I can do that. But I don't need to stay married, you know? And I remember still thinking like, okay, we can have this forgiveness and all this, but do I really need to stay married? Because there's no trust. And how do you have a marriage with no trust?
Right.
And so what was interesting about that is, the pastor had asked, I had asked him that question, and he'd said, well, that's interesting. Does the Bible say trust one another? And I didn't know much, but I said, no, that doesn't sound right to me, you know? And he said, you're right. And he said, what does it say? Do you know? And I said, well, yeah, love one another. Right. And he's like, that's right. So he said, well, who do you think you're supposed to trust? And I said, you know, God. He says, you know, that was correct. So it was interesting, because to me, that was, again, that helped me to recognize that forgiveness and trust weren't the same thing.
Right.
That I could forgive. That was like a step of faith that I needed to take.
Right.
The same way that I just laid my stuff and the Lord forgave me. I needed to do that. And then, but the trust I recognized was something I needed to decide if I even trusted God. Cause at this point I didn't know if I trusted him. I kind of thought he was a little harsh, you know, but it took me a couple weeks, and I remember just dwelling on, do I trust God? And, you know, we were studying verses at this point about marriage from the workshop, and I decided I trusted God. So I could focus then on trusting God. And then what does it mean to love Ron? you know, so trust God and love Ron. And so then we did, we fortunately were going through a workshop where we did come across, you know, Corinthians, and it was brand new to me, even though it had been, you know, shared at our wedding. It wasn't something I did or remembered, you know, and now I was looking, we were looking at the word of God so differently now. Right. Now all of a sudden, if it said to do something, we were like, okay. So we were just kind of doing, trying to do the things that it said, you know, so it keeps no record of wrong. So I tried my best. I'm not going to be bringing up things from the past. I'm not going to dwell on things from the past. You know, I'm not going to be sticking that in his face, but it's still there and it still hurts. Right. But I had a God now that I could give that to and trust him with that stuff and then just focus on loving Ron and forgiving Ron and doing all those things. So that's kind of how I lived it out, you know.
Yeah. And, right.
It was a process. Yeah. It took time.
Oh, yeah. Maybe there's somebody, you know, I know as people are watching and listening, you know, we just dumped it all out there. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, we were, you know, it was a shambles, you know, and so, you know, there's marriage restoration, which we certainly experienced, but, you know, marriage intimacy, improving your marriage and certain things, maybe trust has been broken or violated in a certain number of ways, other areas. Maybe it isn't through a unfaithfulness or something, but trust is broken, whether it's an addiction or a difficulty or some kind of thing has happened. So many ways that can happen, and that happens in all our relationships. We've learned a great equation that we want to just pass on to you is this, the equation for trust, and Jody and I learned this together, it's CB over T. So what that means is consistent behavior over time. And once you have consistent behavior, and you could even say changed behavior, you know, in our case, we're describing some pretty big decisions that I had to make. I wound up quitting my job. I wound up ending that, you know, there was a lot of things that had to happen. And mm-hmm. So for that person who's struggling with trust in a relationship, they need to see that change behavior over time. And yeah. You can't just, hey, you know, I forgive you, and then go back to the same things. And I know you guys know this. So many couples we talk to, counsel, you know, that's not going to be the direction that's going to change things and move forward. So mm-hmm. Trust can be rebuilt. It just takes time. Mm-hmm. And right. Sometimes the greater right. the offense, the more time it takes. That's and really longer. The person, yeah, the longer, or the person who is, you know, been hurt is the one that should dictate the timetable because, you know, that's really going to be helpful and beneficial.
Yeah. Well, I love that equation. I think that is really good. And yeah. I think a lot of times why people struggle with making the decision to forgive is they believe that then they need to trust.
Yes.
Right. Immediate.
And it's yeah, not, right. they're completely different.
Yeah. Yes. Totally.
Yeah. And so to understand, forgiveness is really about getting your heart untangled yes. and available to God.
Right.
And then, like you said, trust is change behavior yeah. over time. So you begin to prove that you are trustworthy again.
Exactly. Yeah. We love what Ruth Graham said. And she said that a good marriage is two good forgivers. So, yeah. Yeah. And I know, you know, probably that's, you know, probably some of the best advice is that, you know, to learn forgiveness, to grant forgiveness, to rebuild the trust. So, you know, these are some of the choices that we learned and started making. And, you know, to do this is to love unconditionally. I mean, you know, to do that. And these are the things we started to put into practice to really rebuild the foundation of our marriage.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've got choose to love unconditionally. How about choose to grow spiritually? Let's talk about that one briefly.
Yeah, for us, you know, and again, I, you know, a lot of what we, you know, have experienced, you know, it's through our own story, and we like to do this is make it really simple for people. And, you know, so we look at, you know, growing spiritually is this, we've got to both be going after it and going forward. So we like, we call it the relational triangle, the marriage triangle. And so we just draw a triangle with God at the top. And, you know, one spouse at that one corner and the other spouse at the other corner. And as simple as that sounds, think about it for a moment. The distance between you at the corners is greater. But as you move up to both sides of the triangle, guess what? And get closer to God, which we experienced for the very first time. Then guess what? I mean, I don't want to make it too simplistic, but sometimes we do overthink it. If we're both pursuing a godly relationship with him, then we're closer together at the top. And so, you know, that's what it looks like to grow spiritually for us. You know, that looks different in certain stages and times, but, you know, I'll just start with this, you know, are you both pursuing our relationship with God? You know, so many times we talk to couples And, you know, it breaks our heart at the front of the church where one is really going after it and the other is not really that concerned. And if you think about that triangle illustration, one's going towards the top, the other one's down at the bottom. It's a long way apart. So really for us, you know, choosing to grow spiritually is the idea that what? That certainly we have to establish the relationship with Christ, which we've talked about, but then making the effort to do what? To grow in that relationship. And, you know, that's, you know, we're certainly, I know you guys are too, the local church, what a great place to be consistent, to grow, get involved with other people, other couples, whether that's in a small group or a Sunday school class. I mean, even for your, you know, what a great thing that, you know, with those who are watching this broadcast that, you know, hey, are you trying to do it on your own? Because if you're trying to do it on your own, growing spiritually, we need each other. So got to build your house on the rock, your foundation, your spiritual life. And that's the most important thing that we've experienced. You know, you can do this too. You can flip that triangle on its side and put yourself at the top or your spouse at the top. And,
or your,
you know,
kids.
Yeah, anything. And that's really going to lead to real difficulty. Right. So I think open, honest conversation between your spouse and yourself about, you know, this season of life and what are you guys really pursuing? What is that looking like? I mean, those are the real conversations you want to have on these date nights.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Really,
where it's not just about sharing the laundry list of things that have to get done, right? But carving out some time to really talk about your hopes, your dreams, your fears, your expectations. I mean, those are all such important things.
They are. No, yeah. Kidding. So we've got choose to love unconditionally, choose to grow spiritually. Let's see if we can talk about choose to serve sacrificially.
Yeah, totally. Well, and one of the things that we've learned and is the best way to serve your spouse is, you know, you can think about the different seasons. I mean, you know, I think of, you know, Gary Chapman's book, you know, The Five Love Languages, and he talks about, you know, man, I mean, those are phenomenal things that are really, really critical and important. And so, you know, Jody and I didn't really, you know, I thought, you know, it's like I was doing one when she really desired another. And, you know, so getting on the same page with how can we best serve each other in certain times. I remember, you know, it was like, you know, choose quality time. And then we had two little kids running around. And it was like, you know what Gary Chapman doesn't tell you in that book is that they can change. Are you hearing me?
He probably does.
Describe it enough. And so I finally mastered the one. And then the next thing you knew, this season, I mean, she needed helps. You know what I mean? I needed to help around. But I think, you know, as we're joking around, one of the best things you can do to serve sacrificially is to really know your role, biblically speaking. And really fulfill that role in a way that honors God. And we certainly weren't doing that. And we didn't know, you know. And so really understanding your role in light of what the Bible teaches and what God desires, I think that's the best way we can serve each other in our marriage relationships. And, you know, men have a deep need. I mean, they have a deep need for significance. And so, you know, the role of a wife is that what she can do is really build into that husband as she does what? As she respects him and honors him. And, you know, for the wives, I mean, you know, there's a deep need for security. And, you know, for us, and I know even for Jody, she was a, you know, a top businesswoman. I mean, she was going after it. But I think part of that was that, hey, I'm not going to depend on anyone else.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for me to be able to recognize and to really patiently help her and to serve her in a way where I could do this, I could, you know, love her, you know, so I could lead through love and what that looks like and being patient. And those are the things that have really helped us as we serve each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love that.
Good. That is good.
Well, I think we only have time for maybe one more. So let's talk about choose to communicate respectfully. Because I know what we see as we coach other couples and as we do our marriage seminars, man, communication is where things really break down. So I once saw somebody say that communication is the most dangerous thing humans can do.
It's true. It is.
And, you know,
I talk about that.
You know, the statistic that I read recently is that, you know, the average married couple only communicates 27 minutes per week. I mean, think about that. That's 4 minutes a day. I mean, that is not a good situation. So you know, it's the buzzword. You know, communication is always the thing where people say, hey, you know what? you know, that's the thing they're willing to admit when they may be having difficulty. I mean, we just happened to, you know, this weekend at the church, you know, somebody came out, well, we're having communication issues. And so all of us, I think, need to learn how to communicate respectfully. And so Jody and I, you know, one of the things that we've done is we've talked about words to cut out, words to change out, and words to call out in our communication patterns. And, you know, words that cut out, you know, obviously, are, you know,
comes from Ephesians 4:29, where it says, let no corrupt communication, you know, proceed from your mouth, only that which is helpful for building up the other person. And so it uses like no corrupt and then only that, you know, so those are, that's a big contrast. And so what is corrupt communication? You know, it can be obvious things like swearing and name calling and, and things like that. And we need to decide that some of those things we need to just cut out. Like it's just got to not be a part of our vocabulary anymore. And again, you're asking God to help you with that because it might be something that maybe you grew up with that. Maybe that was just the way, you know, that is how your family fought, you know? And so it's kind of like a fighting fair thing, but corrupt communication, you know, we need to cut that out. On the other hand, the you know, the building up communication is the one we need to exercise and practice. So
And so changing out. So think like, you know, we've learned it's like this, you know, anytime I say, you always do this, you never do this, you know, it's the, you got to change words out because, you know, I mean, you're just overemphasizing and you're lighting a fire in your communication. I think many of us, we haven't really, you know, we're communicating with our emotions and we're not attacking the problem, you know, we're attacking the person. And so really changing out some words and then calling out, you know, is really, really critical. And I remember when Jody and I, you know, our kids, we taught them this and we gave them permission to call us out. And so we were on a long trip.
Any of us could call.
Anybody, you know, call out, you know, different things that, hey, I'm thin ice here. And I remember
speech.
And I remember when we were driving back from vacation and we thought the kids were asleep in the back, you know, one of them's in a car seat. And, you know, so we're talking a little bit. And so what we told them was when you heard, you know, somebody was on dangerous thin ice, you just say 429. And so just think about that, you know, four Ephesians, 420, just say 429. Hey, this is getting a little bit sketchy. You know what I mean? We got to tone it down a little bit. And Jody done that and 429. And all of a sudden we're talking about some stuff. And probably if we're honest, we're talking about, you know, family or probably church, you know, how people are in church. It's just like, you know, pastor, we're talking, oh gosh. You know, and all of a sudden out of the car seat, the youngest who I didn't even barely could speak 429.
So she called us out.
She was calling us out.
She was right.
But honestly, you know, when we're talking about communication, you know, with those who are watching, you know, can you have a conversation about those three things? You know, what are the words we do need to cut out? What are the words we do need to change out? And just to slow it down and really talk about what are the things that we do need to call it? And are we willing to give permission? I mean, those are all really, really helpful things as we're growing in our levels of communication and the patterns that we have.
Oh, that's good. That's good. You know, at our No More Perfect Marriage seminars, we teach something called safe conversations. And what safe conversation, we even encourage people, I mean, of course, we're teaching them how to talk to each other, slowing things down. But when we've also said, you know, sometimes you can say, can we have a safe conversation?
Yes, that's good.
And that like puts your antennas up to go, okay, I need to really listen well. I need to not attack. I need to, you know. And I think your 429 is kind of the same thing. Like it puts the antennas up to go, oh, wait. It just kind of pulls you back. And
in a non-threatening way that we've already agreed upon, you know what I mean? Yeah. And really what you're saying when you're saying that, I mean, what a great way to say, hey, let's have a safe conversation. That's meaning, hey, we're getting a little, this doesn't feel very
safe.
There
might be some sensitive things.
And so, you know, let's take a minute, take a time out. We'll have this safe conversation in an hour or, you know what I mean? But we've got to do this. And our marriage depends upon it, you know. What a great tool. Hey, we're taking that one, man. We're going to go after that too. We're using that next time.
There you go.
We need a couple of safe conversations today, I think.
Mondays, an interview. We always have fresh content.
Absolutely.
Keeping it real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, this has been a good conversation, you guys. Thank you. And for those that are watching, the other choices that they also talk about in their book are choose to please regularly, choose to persevere persistently, and choose to bless abundantly. And while we don't have time to go into those, they're just good reminders to us, even just hearing those words. So we are grateful. And we have one more question for you.
So our final question is, we think it's good for our listeners to hear. What is your favorite date night?
That's good. You should ask me to tell her, be hers, and she should tell mine. Oh, and we'll see what we're really going here. No, I'm kidding around.
Can we have a safe conversation about that?
Well, my favorite, I would say, I mean, occasionally it's nice to go see a show or something, but I know that's special. But the thing I think that really I feel like fuels our marriage is we've always enjoyed activity together. So we like to go on bike rides, long bike rides. And so where we live, there's something called the Illinois Prairie Path, and we can just go. And we can hit little towns along the way. So we'll bike and have lunch and then, you know, come back. So sometimes it's a couple hour thing, but that's something we can do on a weekend. It's something we even did with the kids when they were little. We had a whole string of us and we did on vacations. But what's fun is sometimes when you're doing stuff like that, you can have good communication because you're on bikes. You're not necessarily looking at each other. Even a long drive can sometimes accomplish that, where sometimes you have really good communication. I notice, especially with the guys, that when you're doing something like that, maybe driving or biking or walking, sometimes we have our best conversations then. Yeah. And so I like it for a lot of reasons, you know, but I think that's probably my favorite.
Well, and you know what, I mean, we love it too. We love you know, I love being active and doing some things like Jody said with bike rides and things like that. But I think, you know what, for us too, it's like, you know, just to go out and have a nice quiet dinner. I mean, that's our thing. I mean, there's a couple restaurants, doesn't have to be expensive, doesn't have to be long, but just to take some time where we can really unplug from the kids, the pressures. You know, as a pastor, we find sometimes we got to drive a little bit to get away, to go to a restaurant that's a little hole in the wall, but you know, we can really, really spend some time together. And so we really encourage couples to do really three things. It's like, we talk about, you know, a date night once a week, which is a phenomenal thing, whatever that would look like, but also this, a date day once a month. And what, you know, that you could give in, and maybe it's not the whole day, but like Jody and I said, we'll go for a bike ride, or, you know, we love to go downtown Chicago and go down to the lake there and walk the lakefront. And then, you know, a date weekend, which is, you know, a really good opportunity once a year to, you know, get away for a good night, a good weekend where you can do this. You can really unplug and invest in your marriage so that these choices will be ones that you continue to make and that marriage not stay strong.
That's good.
That's cool.
Good stuff. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Great getting to know you guys. We're thankful for your ministry and love hearing what God's doing through you guys.
Thank you.
Well, this is Mark and Jill Savage and Ron and Jody Zappia, and we are signing off with a reminder that a real marriage is not perfect. A real marriage is two people being perfected. Thanks for joining us.